Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where Brandy meets.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Wow!
Both of your reactions are deranged.
Fuck him. Is it his own head in the sand about his own in fucking fidelity?
This is the longest answer Taylor's ever given.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hi, this is Taylor. Just wanted to kick off this episode with a bit of a confession, and that's that I got it wrong, guys. You're going to listen to this episode and you're going to notice I got it wrong. In fact, I got two things wrong, at least. And it's not the first time this has happened. It won't be the last, but I'm horrified, guys. So first of all, and sorry to spoil it, but we will be talking about cheese in this episode. I'm very excited about this topic. I consider myself fairly knowledgeable, but I was tripped up by my own arrogance. And I claim in this episode that Comté cheese comes from Switzerland, and I can only apply, I can imagine the horror, the disappointment that especially French people are feeling upon hearing that your beloved cheese, which of course the region's, you know, it does border Switzerland. It's very, very similar to a Gruyere. So you can see where my mistake came from, but you created this cheese, you own the cheese. I apologize to the entire nation of France. And on that note, while I'm upsetting nations, Germany. At one point, Hannah asks me, is Germany landlocked? I paused. I wasn't sure, but I said you were landlocked. And now I realize that I have thrown a lot of very nice-looking German beaches, a very nice coastline, right under the bus. So Germany, I also apologize to you. I'm sorry for any upset caused. I'll do better.
Welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are here in the studios, aka Lil's house.
As it's known now. Lil's house.
And we are joined by fantastic actor turned author, it's Roxy Dunn.
Yay! I just waved myself, whoops.
Roxy, welcome. We have one question. Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
I have, yes.
Yay! You, thank God. What happened?
Yeah, it was actually quite recently, and I was pleased because I'd already been booked for the podcast, and I was thinking, oh my God, I do need a crime. So yeah, I was like partly thrilled when this happened.
Oh, good for you. The universe was helping.
Yeah. So I was on my way home. It was like a Saturday afternoon, and I was walking up. So it's like quite a busy street just before you turn onto where I live, which is like a square in Hackney. But where I was at, it was like quite bustling, quite a lot of people around. And I was walking home, just like minding my own business as usual. And then out of nowhere, this woman just kicked me really hard on the shins.
Oh,
yeah. Just went, yeah, you bitch.
Wow.
And I was like so taken aback by this that I actually just did what you're obviously not really meant to do with people who have, like, you know, clearly got, like, you know, mental health problems.
Yeah.
And instead of, like, just getting out of her range, I just stood there and I went, I started reasoning with her and I said, you can't do that. How dare I say to you? So then obviously she just went for me again. And this time she kicked me, but she shoved me as well. And then,
my God,
and then there was like a couple who were like driving past, stopped their car and like went out the window and went, are you all right? Do you want a hand? And I was like, no, I think I'm fine. Because at this point as well, I was like, Roxy, like, get into gear. Just get out of this woman's way.
Get out of the range.
Yeah, get out of the range. Oh, yeah, also, this is kind of like a bit of a bougie but probably relevant detail. I was on my way back from a massage. So I think in my, you know, in defence, I was a bit less alert than I might otherwise have been. Anyway, so then I got out of the way and I was like, walking back up to the road to my house, and I was thinking, do you know what? Like, it'd be really cool if I could tell my partner this story without being really emotional, because, you know, I'm actually fine. Like, you know, I didn't really get hurt.
It was really shaking, though.
It was shaking.
Yeah, really shaking.
Of course.
Yeah. So then I got as far as like unlocking the door, and I was like, well, good. And then he was in the kitchen. He was like, hey, you're right. And then actually the adrenaline left me, and I was like, not really. I've just been kicked by this woman. And then he just went, oh yeah, that lady on the corner, she got me too.
No!
And then at this point, I was like quite, A, indignant, because I was like, where was my heads up? And B, like, I just felt a bit embarrassed because I was having this like really dramatic, you know, like emotional outburst. I was like crying at this point, and he was like making a sandwich. So then he was quite sweet, and he like gave me a hug and was like, oh, she probably kicked you harder than she kicked me. All this like, you know, lame stuff to make me feel better. And so it was all fine, and then we like changed the subject. And then, like 20 minutes later, yeah, we like weren't talking about it at all. We'd moved on, and he just went, yeah, it was actually quite annoying that woman kicked you, because I was really looking forward to telling you the story about how she kicked me.
Oh my God!
Right, yeah.
And the top trumps of like, the,
yeah,
got the
totally,
story.
Yeah. But when I've told people this story since, as I have, many people, they're just like, yeah, okay, both of your reactions are deranged.
Your reaction's not deranged.
I feel like one of my friends was like, where is your flight or fight instinct? Why would you just stood there being like, well, now technically this isn't, you know, viable behaviour.
You can't do this.
I just did. Yeah, yeah.
You were trying to reason with her.
I was, yes.
Which, you know, is a rational response, but you could argue it was an irrational situation.
Oh, I like that. I'll take that for my next time I tell the story. Yeah.
It's such a London story too. Like, you can only enjoy your massage for like 10 minutes before somebody assaults you and takes all the pleasure away.
Yeah. Taking the shine off that little bit of relaxation. Now I'm traumatized and crying.
She owes me 60 quid or whatever it costs. Yeah.
Do now you and your partner just take different routes home so you'll never have the same story again.
The shin lady.
No, I'm slightly more alert when I pass that Sainsbury's, though. It happened outside of Sainsbury's.
You get really shaken up, though, because it is assault. That's an assault.
It is.
And of course your body's going to have that reaction.
Yeah.
And actually, it's very healthy that you were upset, because that's you processing that feeling, and then it will pass through you and then it will leave. So you actually were very healthy.
Yeah.
So your partner is
20
a psychopath.
Years time, yeah. When it rears up for him.
This is so nice of him getting therapy from this podcast. Yes.
I love that. Would you like validate people's reactions to anything? Yeah. And then I stabbed the bitch, but that was you like expressing yourself.
You were reclaiming your power.
Yeah.
That's what you needed.
We really
actually do that yeah. to everybody.
Whatever you did was valid. Yeah, you're like, that was actually you committing the crime, but sure, yeah.
And the fact it was a woman that did it to you, I'm like, what man did something to her to make her do that?
Yeah, so. Obviously a man that started the whole thing. But like, also, it's probably less scary for your partner because he's not probably going to be as injured by a woman.
I think fair to say. Oh, and I didn't even say she was wearing those like steel boots.
Oh,
you know?
Jesus!
Oh,
yeah, it's
proper.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yikes!
I got whacked.
Really, did either of you call the police or anything?
No, because it is ironic that I was like, I can't believe you didn't give me a heads up, and then we gave nobody else a heads up.
Yeah, it wasn't like we then called the police or did anything. Like,
I think we decided if she was still there when we went out for dinner, we were like,
all right, she's got 6 hours. Then we call the police. to get through. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how well I come off from this story. We always ask on this podcast, if you had the perp in custody now, what would you say?
If I had the what?
If this woman,
we call her the perp.
We're official police. This is
sorry, sorry. I'm not on board with this terminology.
The perpetrator.
The perpetrator.
We're so used to saying it too. We're like the perp.
Like, but also we're just going straight from like your feelings are valid to yes. Yeah. The perp.
The perp. Yeah. The perp.
You're downtown. She's in the slammer.
We're the cops with feelings.
I'd say, well, last time I tried to reason with you, so this time I'm just going to kick you.
Let her taste of her own medicine.
Yeah. No, I say thank you for giving me a story.
Yes.
Yeah. Always, you know.
There you go.
Every slight or every grievance as a writer or whatever, as a storyteller, it's always a bit useful, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if you're passing through Hackney, look out for the woman on the corner.
Yes. Yes. We think it's currently been removed, but may come back any day. Yeah.
You meant the corner. I was like, that's like extreme. You mean the woman?
The woman. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh man. Wonder who she thinks she's kicking.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. What's happening for her?
What's her narrative?
Yeah. Yeah, because I did ask my partner, I was like, what did she say to you? Did she call you a bitch as well? And he was like, no, it wasn't bitch. It was like something like, oh, yeah, and you're just going to leave me as well or something. It was like she was in some other place. You know?
Some kind of break has happened there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope she's worked it out. I hope there's been, you know, less than a dozen shins said.
Yes.
Yeah. It hurts to get kicked in the shin, too. Can I just throw
it's a tender
out there?
Place. Yeah.
That's a horrible place to get kicked.
Yeah. No, it's unusual as an adult, isn't it? Like at this age, to get... have a violent act on you, like anything physical like that. It's like, oh gosh, okay, yeah, jolting, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have cried before I got home. I don't mind saying.
Yeah. Making me feel better.
Burst into tears in front of the woman. No. Probably would. Oh my gosh.
I'm trying to reason with you.
Well, because what have you three ever been in? Like growing up, were you in physical fights? Because I don't think I even was.
Oh, I was.
Oh, you were. Okay, so you know that sensation.
Yeah, but it's I was like the roughy tufty kid. That's a saying, right? You're the roughy.
It's the kind of thing a roughy tufty would say.
I was like lots of physical fights and stuff, like play fighting, but also like it's taken a turn. But I've also been like assaulted in the street, and it's very different.
Have you been assaulted in the street as well?
Well, yeah. So one time, it's similar.
The lady?
No. I think it was. It was no, like a bit, obviously I've been grabbed by men, but this was not that. I had a really massive backpack and I was carrying bags. Two buses had just emptied when I lived in Camden. So it's like mayhem trying to get past this thing. And I was like just trying to squish past everybody, but everyone was bundling. So I ended up pushing somebody, and then I like managed to squeeze through and I carried on walking. But whoever I'd pushed ran after me and shoved me.
Oh,
and I actually fell on the ground into the road.
Oh, gosh.
And if a car had been coming, I would have been killed.
Fuck.
Oh, but as Jesus. It was, I just grazed my knee was all bleeding. And I got up and she was shouting, don't push me. Or like, you know, like she felt that I had aggrieved her. And then this man came along and like stopped her and was like, what are you doing? You just pushed someone in the road. And then she left. And then I was quite near where I lived at the time, but I was really shaken up. Like, it's a huge, and like you always were playing, oh my God, imagine if a car
into the road. Yeah. That part of it is
also
just
like
horrifying.
Knowing where you used to live in Camden. Did this also happen outside of Sainsbury's?
It was the other side of the road.
Right.
We're really selling Sainsbury's and Hackney.
The pusher works across from the shin lady.
Wow. So did you presumably it was the weight of like your rucksack that
I
made
was,
you topple forwards?
I was, there was
shelling your pack.
A lot of happening. A lot of, there was a lot of happening, guys.
Everybody there could have used a massage.
Yeah, yes. Back that's to that. What we need.
We
need
do.
Solutions. The woman in Hackney needs a massage. Everybody angry at the bus stop needs a massage.
I was going to say government massages, which really doesn't sound nice, does it?
You know what? It's,
I had a government massage.
It's so open to abuse as well. Why the hell are we suggesting this?
I used to fight with my friend's older brother, who was several years older, but I just loved it. Loved a good physical fight. And then I remember it all stopped when he joined the Marines. That was
And I'm out.
And okay. Yeah, I'm not sure I can win this. I never won.
He knows how to win now.
Yeah.
Otherwise it turns into Con Air. I've killed her.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Well, on that note, are we ready for some true crime?
Yes.
Please.
Okay, I'm going to start with this. In London, on Tuesday the 4th of September, 1666, Samuel Pepys recorded in his diary that he buried something in his garden to protect it from the Great Fire of London that was rapidly approaching his house.
Ooh.
Question, what did he bury? And it's two things. So, get either, get one.
Whoa. His diary?
It's the only thing I know he ever opened.
Wait. I forgot to finish when I was ready. Dig, dig, dig. I'm going to say, I'm not embarrassed to say I don't know a whole lot about Samuel Pepys.
Okay,
I don't know if he was married.
I follow him on Twitter because there's an account that posts like little snippets.
Was it his elixir of life?
Yeah, his cryogenic chamber.
You know, he cheated on his wife. Anyway, that's not what
So he did have a wife. So I was going to say he buried a wedding band. Why would you bury a wedding band if there's a fire coming? Just wear the fucker. No, that's a terrible answer. You guys go.
He doesn't fucking deserve a wedding band if he cheated on his wife. Fuck him. Is it his own head in the sand about his own fucking fidelity? So I really don't like Pepys right now. Or Peppies, as I used to think it was called.
I know, it's upsettingly recent that I started pronouncing it correctly. But you know what? I read this meme that said, that means that you learned something from reading and you shouldn't be ashamed.
Yes. Oh, yes, that's so true. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like
that. My friend actually was doing a casting where she had to say, Mr. Pepys will see you now. And she was like running it through and she was like, Mr. Pepe will see you now. And we were like, sorry, we're going a bit off the track now, but I remember going for a UPS casting and I was referring to it as ups. And my friend was like, oh, rocks, just before you go.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, no, there
were
a lot of those. And lots
that's
of reading.
So
there we go.
Reader over here.
Yeah. I've changed my mind and I think it should be something flammable because that would make sense. So
okay.
A manuscript that was not yet published.
Nice.
And you said two things.
Yeah.
Ooh. I mean, was it a very shoddily thrown together time capsule?
Nice.
Because I remember in the year 2000, me and my brothers did a time capsule. We buried it in our garden. And come 2002, we dug it up.
What was in it?
We could not wait.
Oh, wow.
Just shit we'd put in it. But I can't believe we were just bored one day. We're like,
look how retro pencil cases were.
Yeah, I don't even like SpongeBob anymore.
Yeah, the world has changed.
I cannot remember what we put in it. But it's so annoying because I remember exactly where we buried it. And like the idea of digging that up, like just remembering and digging that up when I went home would have been so cool like 20 years later. Well, 25 years later.
Yeah. We screwed over future either.
We did. We really did. We were just like, had to have it. Had to have it all there and
never
then.
Never mind. Roxy, did you answer?
No, I tried to get away with not answering. I think it is maybe something like valuable that might... Does metal melt in fire? Like a golden candlestick or something that he might need
like
for his...
valuable.
A valuable that maybe couldn't take his personage for some reason, too heavy.
That is a great answer. Now, nobody has hit on the correct
Damn
answer.
Damn it!
He buried his wine and his Parmesan cheese.
Yes! A man after my... I like him again. Cheat on your wife all you like. Cheat on your wife with me.
It's wine
we're having
cheese.
Parmesan and
you
cheese
don't eat
and
fancy
wine.
Fondue.
Oh my gosh.
So it was estimated that the cheese would have cost him several months' salary. So it's not surprising that he wanted to save it from looting. It's like a laptop, you know.
Oh, but imagine though, if
that
it had...
That is so bizarre.
It would have smelt delicious if it was in the Great Fire of London, wouldn't it? As it kind of like melts.
It'd be like a raclette.
Toasty.
Oh.
Yeah. Get some breadsticks.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are we just like, oh God, the Great Fire of London.
Yeah, I'm hungry now. So we are going to be talking in this case about cheese.
Yes.
So I just wanted to set
things
the scene.
Just looked up for Taylor Glenn. I was nervous and now I'm excited.
So cheese is still the most commonly stolen and smuggled food out of all the food and drink around the world.
Wow.
In 2011...
Most of it's meat, guys.
a cheese theft cost $100 billion.
What?
And it's a mix of shoplifting and organised crime. Fun fact, apparently Russia and India are the world leaders in cheese crime.
Whoa.
Samuel
Interesting, because they make the worst cheese.
I was Maybe just that's thinking, why. Like, other than paneer, I can't think of Indian cheese I've had.
No.
And Russian cheese...
No one's ever said Russian cheese.
No. It's not, or is it that's when they need to steal it because they don't have their own good cheese?
Like, they're sick of paying import taxes.
Yeah.
Nice. So Samuel Pepys was trying to save Parmigiano Reggiano. No, God.
Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yeah, she's got it. Rolled off the tongue.
We've got a fact checker.
Samuel Pepys, I know shit. Parmigiano Reggiano, what do you want to know?
It's good between us. We've got everything covered. So it's not as expensive today as it was in 17th century England, but it is still the most looted of the cheeses. It's nicknamed the King of Cheeses, King of all cheeses. It's like champagne. They only make it in like this one region of Italy for it to be the official
one.
The Reggiano.
Reggiano.
There's all these strict guidelines, so it's official, and they have like authenticity and individual ID codes.
Oh my God.
Tracking each wheel of cheese. So question, why is Parmesan extra vulnerable to looting?
I love the idea of Parmesan being vulnerable.
Help!
Oh! I'm shy!
So extra vulnerable in more than just for the reason that it's the most expensive and most sought after.
Yes.
Because that was my answer to my she gave us the answer in the question.
What should we do with its strong scent?
Is it because it travels so well?
Oh, that's a good answer.
It's a low moisture cheese because of the aging process and has a very thick rind. So I think it would be very transportable and probably more tolerant to a variance in temperature than other cheeses.
It's not that we've hit on Taylor's exact area of expertise.
I
finally know something.
This is the longest answer Taylor's ever given.
That's mental.
Usually, Roxy, just so you know, it's like dick joke, dick joke. Cover up your ignorance with a dick joke. So
that was very eloquent, actually, the way you said that, yeah.
I guess now I've got to do a dick joke. Give me a second.
Because you're normally the eloquent one, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Normally, I just, really amaze people with my knowledge, actually. Okay, interesting. Is it sort of... This isn't true. I was about to say, is it like... This doesn't make sense. That Parmesan is like free range and they store it outdoors or something.
Your little face. It's
you're
so
along
cute.
The right track.
What? I was just thinking about it in terms of like the little bags it's in, but I'm guessing back in the day it wouldn't have been in little drug bags. It would have been as a wheel. So
yes.
Yeah, no, nothing to add.
Okay, so Hannah was along the right lines.
Wow.
I hate you.
despite Taylor's excellent knowledge.
God damn it.
It takes such a long time to mature that they're sitting somewhere for absolutely ages. So they're basically sitting ducks waiting for that to happen. It's like a
fine... I feel like I hinted at that.
Yeah, there was a bit of that.
Yeah,
some of the aging.
Partial credit.
So it's just sitting around.
Yeah, so it takes up to 3 years. So they have to put it somewhere and somebody could get it. And it goes up in value the longer it's... not thawing, what's the word? Fermented.
Maturing.
Maturing, yeah. Thank
there you.
So it's very desirable targets for thieves and gangs. There are 300,000 wheels of... You're going to have to say it again.
Parmigiano Reggiano.
worth around 200 million being kept somewhere safe as we are speaking right now. Question, where are they being kept?
Well, I imagine we don't fucking know. Do you know what I mean? Like, why would you say, oh, I guess that's where all the millions worth of cheese is being kept? Or you'd be like, oh, no, that's all, like, kept down the road. And then actually it would be...
All right,
around
so you
the
think
corner.
Top secret.
I don't think like, you'd tell anyone,
hiding
would you?
In plain sight. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So secret location.
Yes.
Any advance?
Or is it sort of a trick question and it's sitting in customs somewhere? Because a lot, you'd have to have the crooked people in customs to get it through.
Right.
And then I wonder if it gets stuck there. Just because things get stuck in customs.
Okay, so kind of lost in the system.
Well, because you're talking about organized crime. So I'm just trying to think, like, are there mafia warehouses full of...
Okay, mafia warehouses, nice.
Yeah, those were two different answers, but
I think just because it fits with my vision of Italy, it's in like an old monastery or a church somewhere.
Oh,
just want that image. So
that's
yeah.
lovely.
Yeah, stinky
yeah.
church.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet some are. In fact, I bet some are where you've all said. But the answer that I was looking for.
She's so supportive.
She really is. Everything's right.
Female workplace. The correct answer is Italian bank vaults.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
And one Italian bank actually accepts wheels as parmesan as collateral against the loans they make to farmers who need cash while their precious cheeses mature.
Oh, amazing. Italy.
That's amazing.
Incredible. Just when you thought you couldn't get cooler.
I know. Really enjoying my own cheese facts, so I'm going to just do a couple more Please. Cheese facts and then we'll get to
Yeah,
the
no,
case.
I'm enjoying just learning. Just keep it going. Yeah.
Oh my God, I was just going to sing that.
You gotta pay the tax. Something. I was trying to do a
Katie starts talking.
Sorry. Cheese facts.
You gotta pay the tax.
So, 4% of the cheese made in the world is destined to be stolen.
Whoa.
And with it's my destiny. I'm vulnerable.
I'm old.
And obviously, like, one wheel can be worth, like, several hundred dollars, but they all have these identification marks, but obviously the thieves slice them up into wedges.
That must hurt.
And then, yeah. Do you want one more, like, disgusting cheese fact before
yes.
I...
how could we say no?
Could you imagine? No, thanks. Carry on.
Yeah.
Did you hear about this celebrity cheese?
Is it... This is like a joke.
Yeah, it's just like a setup.
It came to the red carpet. No. Not even a punchline. Right. In 2019, they made cheese from bacteria found in the underarms and belly buttons of five celebrities.
Oh!
Question.
Oh, my
can
gosh.
You name those celebrities?
I can name celebrities whose arm cheese I would eat.
Nice. Okay. Let's do that.
Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
I'd eat his cheese. Yeah. I decided not to finish the sentence. It's really gross once you put it that way. But yeah, I'd eat Ryan Reynolds.
Maybe Ryan Gosling as well.
All the Ryans. All the Ryans. All the good Ryans.
Some good Ryans.
Well, I'm kind of obsessed with Meryl Streep, but I mean, I'm just mom.
Oh, I feel like her cheese. Yes. Oh, it'd be so delicate and versatile.
Any qualities of hers as an actress, yeah.
Oh, but I feel like you want some really kind of like, because the more mature, the older sort of cheddar. So like, right. maybe you want sort of like, I don't know, Al Pacino or someone who's just like, do you know what I mean? Like, he's super old. Maybe his armpit cheese would be nice. Yeah.
It's also like, who would agree to this? Because it's quite a weird PR. Well, like, yeah, I was one of the cheese donors.
I will tell you.
Oh my God.
Okay, I feel like it's people from Love Island or something.
Well, we have Alex James.
Oh, doesn't... That's from Blur. That's yeah. from Blur. but doesn't he make cheese anyway?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's like a cheese
Slightly
guy.
Slightly on brand for him.
I'm yeah. not going to buy from him. How do I know this didn't come from your underarm?
Well, so none of this cheese got eaten. I'll explain.
Oh,
so,
okay, sorry.
There was Cheshire made from Alex James. Am I pronouncing
Comte.
It? Comte, thank you.
It's a Swiss cheese. It has a very nice meltability factor and a smooth, nutty flavour.
Excellent.
She slightly changes her voice when she does it. It's like voiceover. Yeah.
So you have to sell all of these now. So that was made from Heston Blumenthal's bacteria. Okay, we had Stilton made from Baker Ruby Tando's bacteria.
Okay. I would be a bit offended if they were like, we'll make a Stilton out of that.
Can I be the Gruyere?
Yeah. Why is that the first woman? That feels a bit like, well, you're filthy.
Actually, yeah, the others are all men. Okay, so there's mozzarella from rapper Professor Green's bacteria.
He retweeted me once when I made a joke slagging off Greg David. Yeah, so
wow.
Hey, if you want some beef. It wasn't really slagging him off, but it was a Greg David joke. There you go.
Amazing.
I just didn't see that one coming. That was
It was a bit left field after. The others are all slightly to do with cooking. And the last one is cheddar made from musician Suggs's bacteria.
Wow.
That is one step beyond.
Yay.
Right. But these cheeses were not to be eaten. They were displayed in London's Victoria and Albert Museum. And then they were taken to a lab for analysis.
What?
They were not food grade cheeses that need to determine the implications and safety of human bacteria.
I feel like a cheese string isn't human. Like, no. Like that doesn't feel suitable.
Yeah,
for
I'm wondering about the very definition of what constitutes a cheese at this point. Like, was there milk involved in this process?
Like, I don't. I don't know.
No, Mum.
I'm sorry.
That's not good enough. Katie, yeah. I want more facts.
This case that we're going to be talking about, it's not about Parmesan, but this case may have influenced both food safety labelling and your pizza's cheese. So be careful what you guzzle. Name me a sex tape.
Nice.
Now, we're going to be talking about a little known mobster that you may have heard of. It's Al Capone. And when you think of Al Capone, you maybe think of Chicago, Prohibition, taxes. You don't immediately think milk cartel, but now maybe you will.
Milk cartel.
So as we all know, the Prohibition era ran from 1920 to 1933, and he was super successful with his illicit web of corruption, bootlegging, etc. But in the early 1930s, Capone extended his Midwestern empire into dairy farming.
Wow.
And he acquired a milk processor, Meadowmore Dairies Inclined, with his brother Ralph and some other gangsters.
Oh, Ralph Capone. You don't hear a lot about Ralph
Capone. You don't hear much about Ralph. He paid his taxes. So.
Yeah. Oh, Ralph Capone.
I know. Well, my question is, what is the hustle that Al Capone is going to pull with this dairy?
Ooh.
Well, I mean, it feels as though if you're Al Capone, nobody's going to steal Al Capone's Parmesan. And I've said it once, I'll say it. But like, so surely just actually making some good Parmesan might actually make him as much money as the drugs.
Yeah.
If nobody steals it.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was a legit artisan.
Okay.
Cheese business.
Or does he make like shit Parmesan? He just does it and then he uses that as like the bait and switch. So he uses that to put that in the, when he takes it, it's like Indiana Jones when he does the thing. So he takes the nice stuff out and then replaces it with.
Yeah. With the, not the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, exactly.
These are great answers, Roxy.
Yeah, I know some form of cheese. I'm just, sticking with the cheese thing. Yeah.
Al's cheese.
Yeah.
We're more than just crime.
You know what? You guys' answers are better than what he did. It's essentially price beating. So he is making shit cheese. There's a few things. So,
he's probably undercutting the farmer's pay and stuff like that.
He's undercutting loads of things. And then he is pressurizing people to buy his cheese, kind of.
With a gun.
Or else, exactly.
It's so good, Al. It really is.
The initial scam was that Ralph Capone would ship in milk from neighbouring Wisconsin, which was cheaper. And then they bottled it in Meadowmore's facilities. And that way the Capones could bypass all the local fixed dairy prices and also halt the milkman's union from distributing only local milk.
These people are scum.
Not Ralph, though.
No.
And a former Chicago police officer and mafia associate, this Fred Pasquente guy, he has a memoir all about this. And he has all these details about how Meadowmore was actually a Capone front organisation designed to undercut the city's reigning milk cartel. So it's the battle of the milk cartels.
Wow. It's raining milk. Hallelujah.
Breaking Bad missed a trick, man. Could have been such a good show.
Question, what was the milk union's response to Al Capone and his gang kind of undercutting them?
Excellent work, thank you very much. I mean, that's what you'd say to Al Capone, right? Oh, really brilliant. No, really good. Really good stuff.
Okay, so you think they were cooperative?
It's kind of the
terrified.
Point of being a gangster, right? Is that people just go, absolutely, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, they moved their factory to Wisconsin. Is that where it was? Where he got the milk
from? So it was cheaper in Wisconsin, and they were bringing it in to the area where it was more expensive.
Also, I thought you were doing a pun when you said they moved.
Like, no, but you did. I like it. Okay, so I was going to say they maybe take their factory to Wisconsin. I appreciate there's some external cost involved in that. And then that'll be their milk being used.
So they like swap. Be like, all right, you can have the whole territory. We'll go over here.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so capitulating, Taylor.
This is risky, but did they put everybody on strike? I'll show you strike.
They didn't put everybody on strike, but they did try to stop his operation. They like really fought back. They're this big, powerful union. You know, they're almost gangsters. They're not really gangsters themselves in the same way, but they're properly like, we do this.
Wow.
We do it our way. So this led to what Pascanti in his book calls the ensuing milk wars.
You just can't take it seriously.
And they were just like, I know, they were like all trying to outdo each other. And this, but basically while they're doing this, the sad thing that happened was they pushed out all the mom and pop distributors that couldn't keep up with, you know, these prices.
Mom and pop. I heard Mormon pop. Oh. And I was like, is that a genre of music?
And you know, like, so the union's quite powerful and Al Capone's quite powerful and they've got all this extra muscle. So the kind of the smaller people are like falling through the cracks and going out of business. But Al Capone's crew do have a response to the milk unions, you know, standing up to them. So question, what did Al Capone's gang do in response to the milk union?
Did they blow up their headquarters or something?
Blew up their headquarters. Yeah. Love it.
I mean, did they go full Midsummer Murders and do you remember the episode of, I mean, it's quite a famous thing now that there was an episode of Midsummer Murders where Marty McCutcheon was crushed by a wheel of cheese.
What?
And I cannot believe you don't know about this. It feels like everyone knows about it. Also written by Lisa Holdsworth, who has been on this podcast.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
So I don't know whether there's some crushing that they did that they kind of, you know.
To look like an accident.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to then, just to springboard from what Hannah said, they drown them in their own milk.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's a terrible way to go.
Yeah. That, like, cinematically as well, that's, like,
I'm thinking visual.
It's
I know, powerful. It's an audio podcast.
Yeah, but, no. That's excellent. You guys are all on the right track. What they did was they kidnapped the Milk Union's president.
Oh, wow.
And they used the ransom money to, like, buy Meadowmore, the dairy that they already partly had bought. Mm. And then they gifted it to their attorney, William Perillo. So they kidnap him, but they give him back after they get the ransom.
Huh. And then, so it worked.
So it worked, yeah. So
you don't really hear about those that work, do you? Like a kidnapping where the ransom's paid
and they get returned. Yeah, and it's actually a nice system in a way.
Yeah.
When no one gets
hurt, has more money.
That guy has a story to tell. You know, there you go. Your point.
Yeah,
great story.
He paid up. He went home to his family.
And he went home, and his wife's like, "No, I got kidnapped by Al Capone, and I wanted to tell the story first."
Thanks for the heads up that Al Capone, out there
that Al Capone is bad.
Drunk women solving crime.
Cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So none of the Capones actually face charges for any of that. But it isn't long after this that Al Capone does get locked up for tax evasion. So supposedly Capone's interest in squeezing the milk industry, like he's kind of like there's a point where he's basically really gunning for the milk industry. And it's slightly unclear, like, so basically there's a story, like a kind of a legendary story of like, is this Al Capone's attempt at PR? Or it can't be true. But because he properly has so gone after this milk industry, there's this, you know, slightly altruistic story that goes along with why he's targeted the milk. So question, what do you think the altruistic legendary story of Al Capone might be in relation to milk?
Oh my God, is it like he was doing the opposite of Thatcher? So it was... he was giving the
everyone
the children.
Must have, yeah, exactly. The children will have milk.
They don't have enough milk.
Yeah, like he's the Iron Man, but it's the Iron Man, I suppose. But so like
opposite of snatching the milk.
Exactly, he's giving the milk to children to make them strong to join his gang
because those damn Tories. Yeah, I love that. Okay,
Okay, so that, but on a more personal level, his wife couldn't breastfeed before formula, so he's just getting lots of milk for his newborn.
Really overstated just how much a newborn eats.
I guess
we'll need a...
I just can't think of another reason. I'm trying to turn it into like he has
so
a
good. It's yeah, like, it's just really, gotta be that.
It's hard to follow
go
that
first,
up.
Guys,
I can't follow that up. I'm trying to come up with a story about like as a boy he had a pet cow and no.
Was he really into stray cats? Maybe.
Wait, why does cats? Oh, the milk.
The milk.
Oh, nice. Oh, cat shelter. Yeah. He ran a mafia cat shelter.
You know, that would be great. I love that. It is not correct.
No. But how adorable.
That'd be so cute.
So this claim is that, and this is why it just sounds like made up, because like there's different versions of this story, and in one version it's a family member, in another one it's a family friend's son, but this kid had gotten sick after drinking expired milk. Oh. And at the time, the dairy industry had very few indicators of quality control for their products, particularly when it came to knowing when milk went bad.
Oh.
And so this kid, you know, like people did get sick from bad milk. So, you know, everyone that had written Al Capone off as a violent thug, he's a goddamn hero. He wants health and safety for your children.
Because he invented expiry dates? Like,
well,
was he...
He actually, it is partly because of him that there is tighter quality control on milk today.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. I remember, like, a few times I've put out-of-date milk into a tea and, like, the sort of, like, white bits kind of go up. They just sort of float to the top, just tiny little white bits.
Yeah.
And it was about sort of 4 or 5 cups in after going, oh, that looks nice, that I realised that it was
off.
Yeah.
Drinking them?
Yeah, I drank them. I didn't, you know, this
Hannah.
Is across time. I would
it
just be like, oh, that's
smell
funny. I wonder why that is.
That's funny.
The taste of it is so rancid, no?
No, I mean, it was just a few little bits, but that's a good sign that you know it's off.
Did it smell?
No. I just drank it.
Oh man, one time.
I mean, weirdly, you could make cheese from that.
I could.
If it, like, it turned, like, one time in when I was a teenager, I guess, still living at home, I went to pour milk onto my cereal and just like a lump.
Oh God, it's so gross.
It was so gross. I was like, I'm going to report you people.
Your parents.
Yeah, this is outrageous. You can't have this in the fridge. I live here.
This is a Capone household.
Yeah.
It's funny to think that like the side of milk like cartons in America then had like kidnapped children on it or whatever, so it's kind of like, was that anything to do with him? He was kind
see,
of like
that one. No.
okay
I don't know the origin of that, but he
on
really
brand, but no.
He really pushed for safety dating on labels.
Wow.
And I don't know if that was to his benefit, because he could then, his factory could do it or whatever, and it was like an extra reason why everyone would have to choose his milk. But he genuinely, that is a thing that happened.
I don't know.
That lots of sources credit to him. There's something about Alcatraz prison that I think even from prison he was lobbying for milk bottle dating to ensure the safety of the city's children to the Chicago City Council.
Wow.
It's all grey, isn't it? You know, no one's just bad.
Right. No one's just bad.
We all have a cause.
He had a cause. They were kind of strong-arming other stuff.
Feels kind of relevant when we're all like, Al Capone's a great guy. Yeah. But he still killed a lot of
all that
of
other stuff still happened.
But they cut, so they like, they put it to the council, but they also slightly strong-armed the council. But they made the definition for grade A milk so that inferior grades couldn't be sold within the city. So it is like to his benefit, but it is also safe.
But you know, it's like, it's kind of that thing of, you know, can you ever do a selfless good deed? You know,
right.
Get something from it, take something from it.
Poor Al Capone tried to be selfless. Yeah.
I always wondered why it says grade A milk, because that's a big thing in the States. And I was always looking for grade B. I'm like, what's that like? It's just got stuff floating in it. And that's
sickness.
Like, there isn't any.
Yeah. So he helped pass this milk date milk ordinance, which allowed mothers to protect their children's health by screening the milk they ingested. But yes, now it's really stringent labelling guidelines.
All bad guys have charity stuff.
Yeah.
This is just his. I'm the milk guy.
Yeah. No one talks about my milk enough.
Yeah, you know, hummus is dated because of Jimmy Savile. No, I'm joking.
It's like, huh? I don't get that.
I mean, hummus was just the first thing I thought of, but Jimmy Savile did a lot of stuff for charity, didn't he?
And a lot of bad stuff.
Wait, what?
just, you know, I think they're too stringent on the hummus expiry dates. Like, they're like, eat within, consume within 48 hours. It's like, oh, come on, no one can get through a whole thing of hummus. I mean, I frequently let that pass for a week in the fridge.
Oh, 100%. And also, like, things like mayonnaise, and they're like, once you've opened it, drink, eat within 3 weeks.
How?
Yeah, insane. What? Are you insane? Yeah. Of course I'm not going to do that.
No, mayo lasts way longer than
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay.
Yeah, we're all drinking tea with like bits of kettles floating around. Say, it, yeah.
Listen to Hannah.
Yeah, yeah. No one wants to come and record at my flat anymore.
Yeah. It's probably fine.
It's probably fine. Probably, you know, they saw dollar signs in the lack of controls on the milk production and distribution, but also maybe they helped people. So question, what did Capone supposedly say when he realised how unregulated the dairy industry was?
That's ludicrous. I've lived in this country too long.
That's a great pun.
So what did he say?
Yeah.
I think he said, I'm going to make some sweet dollar from this.
Yes. Okay.
He was like, I mean, did I say that out loud?
I have an evil plan. I mean,
I'm going to save some sweet children from this, is what.
Yeah, I'm doing the internal monologue and Hannah's doing the external, you know, PR voice. Yeah,
there
yeah.
you go.
Okay, close. He supposedly said to his associate, honest to God, boys, we've been in the wrong racket all along.
Right.
Okay. Because he couldn't believe it. Now, I promised you that we would discuss pizza cheese.
Yes, please.
So there was this investigative journalist, Jonathan Quincy, and he reported that Capone, part of his whole dairy empire, meant that he started trying to make New York pizzerias. Right. They had to use what the Village Voice described as his rubbery mob cheese. The name of your sex tape.
Wow.
I was going to say, we're not talking about cheese anymore, are we?
Yeah, rubbery mob cheese. And he's like forcing, like from Chicago, sending all this rubbery mob cheese to New York, right? Part of his distribution arm. But they actually had really nice cheese in New York, shock, because all the immigrants that come from Naples since the early 20th century, when they arrived in New York, they'd been making cheese, like, you know, mozzarella the traditional way. So it was absolutely delicious. It's like what you guys said at the beginning, where, like, you know, they're holding a gun to their heads and going, you sell this cheese now. And right. they really didn't want to. And
but like, I feel like people from Naples would in turn go, no, we also have guns in an organization.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
So, like, yeah, they had to collaborate in a way that left everybody satisfied. Name of your sex tape. And obviously, like, on the one hand, he's like, you know, going to burn down your pizzeria.
That smelled delicious.
But also, like, because this cheese genuinely wasn't nice cheese. It was very low moisture. I'm sure Taylor can describe the difference.
Low moisture, part skim.
So it was much lower quality than the stuff from Naples.
Oh, you can just imagine it. I'm angry.
Well, yeah. So
you can't fuck up New York pizza. That is
right.
Just,
it's a serious
it's
business.
A sacrilege.
They won't stand for it. So they came to this arrangement. Okay, so question. What kind of arrangement did they come to? What was the agreement if the old school pizzerias wanted to sell their own mozzarella? What did they have to do? What kind of situation did they come up with?
Like a blend, like a mashup of the rubbery.
Mashup of the cheeses. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that doesn't. I'm not pleased with my answer. I feel like they wouldn't go for that.
No. I love that they're cutting their cheese. Like, that's great. I'm always cutting the cheese. Am I right?
Did he put like a cap on how much of their mozzarella they could sell before?
Yeah. Okay.
They had to sell his first and a certain amount before they could sell theirs.
Yeah. Some kind of quota cap system.
Yeah. Or they just had to pay to use their own. That sort of feels.
Or they had to pay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they
the cheese tax. The cheese tax.
You're gonna pay the cheese tax.
You guys are. These are. You're. Along the right lines, you're not quite right.
Oh, she can't quite compliment us. That's always the worst.
So, they were allowed to sell their own cheese as long as they didn't serve individual slices. So they had to put up signs saying no slices. And that was a signal that they were following the mob rules and thus didn't want to be firebombed, please.
Whoa.
And there's this, I saw a picture, we could share it on socials, but there was a picture online when I was researching this case of this awning at John's Pizzeria in Manhattan that still says no slices on the awning.
Really?
And legend has it that that is why.
So what form are you selling it in if it's not a slice?
So I guess you have to sell the whole pizza.
The whole ball.
You can't just come in for one slice.
Oh.
Or the whole pie.
Oh, sorry, pizza slice. I was thinking of the cheese slice. Yeah. Okay.
Guess what? So was I. And I was like, oh, slices of the mozzarella? Oh, no, they have to sell the whole ball. We're talking about
pizza.
We
need the photo, yeah.
By the slice.
Oh, a shame. Okay, yeah, no, because I love it by the slice.
Yeah, you don't see enough of that.
No, you don't. You don't see a lot in the UK as much.
You used to be able to buy it in Leicester Square. Do you remember that little window?
Yeah, the little kiosk near Burger King.
Yeah.
I think it is still there. When I first was doing stand-up comedy, it was a pound a slice.
Oh.
And I bet it's like a fiver a slice now.
Do you know what they do at Voodoo Rays?
That's local by the slice.
Yeah.
Well, who wants pizza?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, because otherwise he was pressuring pizzas into buying the cheese from his farms.
Did you say pressurizing pizzas?
Jessica, I've covered this. We've talked about it. Oh, Meadow Moore became the Richard Martin Milk Company in the 1960s.
Wow.
Never heard of it.
Think we should raise a glass to cheese.
Yes, please.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers. Literally my favorite topic. Thank you, Katie.
Drunk women solving crime.
So this was sent to us on Instagram. Okay, so it's from Reburk. Hey, you drunk ladies and drunk Lil.
Aww.
Oh, milk drunk Lil. Sorry.
Yes, yeah, don't worry.
Very topical for this episode, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Help me solve this mystery, please. Me and my boyfriend bought his parents' house and moved in with our kids this year. My mother and father-in-law live with us while they build, which is actually working out well as they watch our kids while we go to work every day. We are exceptionally broke from the move, so have little furniture and splurges that I boast about, but there are a few select things I bought on the move that I was proud of. One of these items was a 12-piece set of plates and bowls from Next that are a beautiful green colour. On Sunday, while putting some clean plates back in the cupboard, I noticed that the tower of plates looked and felt a bit wobbly.
Uh-oh.
I got on a step to check it out. I'm only 5'2", I need a step for everything, and found that one...
No shame.
No shame on that at all.
I'm 5'2" and I don't have a step, but anyway.
How did you get your shins? I said teeny tiny.
She had to kick low.
One quarter of one of my green plates. There is no sign of the remaining three quarters of the plate. I asked my mother-in-law. She knows nothing about it, nor does my father-in-law. My kids are too small to reach the cupboard. My thinking is that the plate must have been broken in the cupboard and someone tried to hide the evidence. Who did this? I feel like Monica from Friends with the box of broken plates. My plate was murdered, dismembered. But they botched the evidence hiding by failing to remove all of it. On top of this, my boyfriend is not at all stressed about this missing plate and is telling me to get over it.
Right, we get some dynamics now.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, yeah.
There's a tiny bit more. But now I have an 11-piece set and it just doesn't make sense. Please help me make sense to this story. I feel I wouldn't have been so angry if someone just admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you've come to the right place, Reburk.
Yeah, it's the fact that there was only a quarter left. So somebody did try to cover that up.
Yeah.
Somebody that doesn't know how plates work.
And like, or they did it in haste, maybe? How do you not notice you've left a quarter of the evidence behind?
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, it's not like a shard, is it? It's just a... Well, I think she's entitled to feel enraged by this. I think that's the first thing to say.
Yeah, Team Ree, the boyfriend needs to appreciate how important this plate is.
Yeah, messed up the dinner set. Well, the children feel like the most logical answer here, don't they? Like,
yeah, but if they're not tall enough to reach it, although she's got a step, can they use the step as well? We don't know what ages they are. Are they step competent?
I'm saying I don't think this is about the plate.
And it's couples therapy. Yeah.
I feel like, also interesting, 11 piece set. I don't understand sets of plates and things. Does that mean that she has like four bowls, four side plates and four main plates. Because mm-hmm. I was thinking, if you've got 11 plates, get over it. But that's not how it works, mm-hmm. isn't it? Okay.
I would smash the 11th plate because that would bother me that I had an odd number, and then just call it a 10 set.
And then decide which child to put out into the world and just get rid of, because it's just like...
And make a really passive-aggressive mosaic with the remaining shards and just hang it up.
Yeah. Just saying, who did this?
Yeah. Destroy something of theirs every day until someone comes forward and admits. Yeah. No, don't do that.
If it helps, I immediately suspected the mother-in-law. Yeah. I think she does know something about it. Yeah. I think she feels really guilty because they're living in the house.
Yeah.
And even though they're acting as free nannies, which sounds really amazing, probably still feels bad, like they're encroaching on their space. And then she went and broke this plate.
Yeah.
But then what about, because you know how in a murder mystery it's often the person you least suspect. So what about the father-in-law? Because he's just like, well, we don't know anything about him. Yeah. What about, you know,
what's a plate, he says.
Yeah. I didn't even cook that plate. Yes. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah. And do you know what? It's quite, normally we blame the mother on this podcast. It's quite refreshing to blame the mother-in-law.
Yeah.
But let's blame the father-in-law.
Yeah, even more refreshing.
Yeah.
That feels good. And he also doesn't know what a full circle looks like.
Yeah, I do wonder if they were drunk. I can't understand why you do such a shoddy clear-up job.
And they wouldn't admit it because they were looking after the children at the time.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, blown wide open.
They had to drink to get through the childcare.
Yeah.
Of course.
Detective Dunn.
Yes. And then they didn't even know they'd done it. Or they were like, oh, that's fine. And they probably don't even remember breaking it. So they, in their mind, they're not even lying.
And they might be like, it doesn't matter. And that's when all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. I did. We should be embracing the fact that this is more like... Not pro couples. You know how everything in society is like very much like twosomes, and I do think this is great because like 11, like why not have a dinner party with 11 people and not 12, and like this perfect homogenous
That's
set.
That's much healthier than my smash the 11th plate.
Wasn't in direct opposition to that.
Or mine, get rid of one of the children.
We've got a lot of growing to do.
Or like as well, like I think who's the most drunk in the house? Because it is probably them.
Yeah.
And then secondly, get a paper plate and whoever it was has to use the paper plate.
Oh, yeah. You are good at punishments, Katie. Fuck.
I don't know where this has come from.
Yeah, you're like a tortured child. Destroy something of theirs every day.
I know how to do things I would never do.
Love that, though. Love that. That's good. It's nice to have the imagination.
Yeah.
But not the...
I'll be a psycho in another life.
Yeah. No, you had us full because your tone was very supportive throughout.
Very pro empowerment and then punishment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well,
I hope that helps.
Yeah. I think we solved the hell out of that.
So accuse all of your family members.
And,
it usually ends like that. She knew what she was going to do.
Yeah. And then storm out and then smash another plate just for the irony. Please write in with more listener crimes. We're really good at solving them. Now, we have just enough time to talk to Roxy Dunn. What are you up to? What do you want to plug? Where can we find more of you?
Yes. So my novel is very soon to be published. April the 4th.
Excellent.
Yeah. Published by Penguin, but available in all good bookstores.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even the shitty ones, I hear.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Available in all bookstores. Yeah. And it's called As Young As This.
Okay.
Go on, tell us a bit about it.
Yeah.
Ooh, well, forgot I was going to have to pitch.
Yeah, come on. I'm not convinced yet.
It's about a woman in her early 30s at 34?
Oh, yeah.
I think so, because you're not mid till 30. Yeah,
I certainly was.
Early 30s, who's on the cusp of making this like life-altering decision, but she's held back by the narrative that her life wasn't really meant to look like this. So in order to try and work out how she's got to this point, she goes back through her story. So at this point, it's like you flash back and each chapter is a different man from the age of 17, going all the way back up to her 34 and whether or not she'll go ahead with this life-altering decision, which you can probably guess what it is, but I'll leave it hanging just in case.
That's great. So she's like taking stock of everything.
Yeah. Kind of like her trying to let go of the narrative, but also work out how she got to that place. And it's like... And it spans, I mean, gosh, quite a long time, like 17 to 34. So, like, I don't know, people have said it's like quite nostalgic read, you know.
Also and a bit funny. Each chapter is a different
man that she's dated throughout her life.
Oh God, so. I have so many chapters. It'd be like the Iliad, yeah. Oh my God.
Mine would be a pamphlet.
Okay.
That wasn't a brag, that was just. just me being like
a virginal Hannah over here.
Good job.
No,
that sounds amazing.
Oh well,
that's great.
Available now.
Yay, there we go. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm doing an event actually. Oh, we can mention this at Burley Fisher, which is our local bookshop, on the 10th of April as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. With another great author called Lottie Hazel, who's just written a book called Piglet that came out in January.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do people have to buy tickets?
Yeah, I think for the Burley Fisher event, it'll be ticketed and you can probably buy on the door or buy in advance. But okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yay. Well, it just remains give it up for Roxy Dunn.
Thanks for having me. I had a blast. I had a cheesy blast.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acas and thank you for listening. Bye!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.